This podcast was produced from a webinar. For a more interactive experience with visuals, visit myamericannurse.com/webinars.
Welcome to our webinar, Mindful Communication, Leadership and Staff Perspectives. My name is Melissa Fitzpatrick, and I'll be today's moderator. I'm the president of Kirby Bates Associates. We provide executive search services and place permanent and interim leaders and advisors in healthcare organizations all across the country. I've had many leadership roles myself, including the former chief nurse executive and senior associate chief operating officer at Duke University Health System. I'm a past president of the American Association of Critical Care Nurses, and I was the chief healthcare strategist at the SAS Institute. I serve on the board at UNC Rex Healthcare, and I'm on the editorial advisory board of American Nurse Today. In fact, American Nurse, our journal, is the sponsor of today's seminar, which is also supported by an unrestricted educational grant from Kirby Bates Associates. The American Nurse Journal has also provided educational topics through a series of webinars, including this one today. These are key topics that inform the practice of nurses in a variety of settings across our industry and our profession. Certainly, today's topic is one of those key topics. What's more important than communicating to the best effect between all members of our teams? Today, we hope that the audience, all of you who are joining us from all over, we'll be able to take away some important pearls of wisdom with you that maybe you can try in your settings. And we hope to meet these objectives with you in our time together. We're going to identify strategies to close any communication gaps that might exist between the frontline care providers and their nurse executives. We're going to share exemplars of successful communication techniques from both the perspectives of the frontline staff and their chief nurses. And we are going to describe the positive outcomes that result when mindful communication techniques are used and when staff at the bedside and staff in the boardroom communicate well and effectively. Now, just to be clear, mindful means many things to many people. When we're using the term mindful communication today, we are going to use the context of purposeful, intentional, inclusive conversation that exists between all levels of our organizations. It is that purposeful communication that has the best results. So that's how we're going to be using the term today. We hope that there will be several key takeaways that you take with you to your practice, to your role, whatever that may be. We hope that you take away some strategies that you can employ in your place of work that facilitates strong, purposeful, mindful dialogue between all members of your care team. We hope that you learn about some measures of success. How do you know when this communication is working? What results might you see when you know that this communication is having the effect that you wanted? And how can you learn to problem solve when maybe communication is not going as well as you had hoped? How to overcome some of those obstacles that might be in the way that are keeping you and your patient care service from communicating at the highest level. I am absolutely thrilled to be joined today by four exemplary nurse leaders from two world-class organizations. First, Dr. DeAndre Dre Carpenter and Maggie Kramer, both from Unity Point Health. Dre is the Enterprise Chief Nurse Executive and the Senior Vice President at Unity Health in West Des Moines, Iowa, and Maggie Kramer is one of his star staff nurses in the MedSurg arena. We also have Lori Ryan, who's the Chief Nursing Officer and Vice President for Patient Care Services at UNC Rex Healthcare here in Raleigh, North Carolina, and one of her superstar staff nurses from the MedSurg arena, Mackenzie Dutman. And we're going to be hearing a lot more from all of our team members here today. But we're going to start today with Dr. Dre Carpenter and his teammate, Maggie Kramer. Dre and Maggie, look forward to hearing more about you and all of the great work that you're doing at Unity Point. Dre,
Thank you, Melissa. Hello, everyone. I'm happy to be here with you today. Pleasure of serving as a communication strategies that we've deployed in our organization over time. I'm happy to also be joined with you today with one of our star clinical staff nurses and unit-based educators, Maggie Kramer. Maggie began her career with Unity Point Health 6 years ago as a nurse resident after graduating from Grandview University. She serves on multiple committees and is also an active leader in our shared governance role, not only in her unit, but across the hospital and the health system as well. Maggie also serves as a unit-based educator, really serving our staff nurses with many strategic initiatives that we'll be talking to you about today that we're excited about that are in flight. She loves precepting new nurses and watching them grow in their profession. And I'd say she would say her most important job is serving as a new mom to a little boy and balancing that between work life and home. Next slide. One of the things that you'll hear me say continuously throughout the presentation is Nurse Proud. We launched a brand initiative several months after I started, really asking our nurses, what does it mean to you to recommit to purpose? Why do we become a nurse? And what are we proud about when we think about the profession? And we developed this brand based upon that. We look at this as our strength, excellence, leadership, and care as the foundation to everything that we do in our organization. And that starts really at the baseline of all the things that we put into our not only our communication strategy, but how we deliver care, how we grow professionally as a professional practice in nursing, and how we look at ourselves in the future as we think about nursing in the future. One of the things that I'm extremely excited about to talk to you about today is a monthly news series that we started just about 6 months ago. It's an enterprise-wide series that goes out to all nurses across the organization. And the exciting thing about it is the series is really developed upon feedback and interest from our nurses. We only communicate and publish what they want to hear from us. We do this in a very strategic way. There's this fluid communication cycle that we leverage in order for our nurses to continuously tell us what are the things that they most want to hear about, while also being in a position to transparently share with them how we're working on things to strategically grow our profession and within the organization. I have the pleasure of serving on the committee that brings together that content every month that goes out in an electronic series. There's a series of videos that we use with that's really targeted because we know that media is an important part of how our nurses want to receive communications. And so that continuously goes every month, and every month has a different theme. Within the communication series, there's a few components that I think we use that have been very exciting for us. One of them is a section of the series called Huddle Notes. We get straight to the point. What do we want you to know? What do we want you to do? And what do we want you to share? And so within that communication series, because you'll see on a subsequent slide, we're going to talk a lot about our escalating huddle structure, our management system, and what the important points of having those huddle talking points in that newsletter and what that really means for our team members. In addition to that, we spotlight and celebrate the wins, whether that's our Daisy nurse in one of our markets, or one of the exciting things that we did most recently was the Iowa nurses in our organization, and we're able to feature all of them in that series. Maggie Kramer here on the call today is one of those nurses. Next slide. I'm going to go a little bit over our collaborative care model, which is an alternative care delivery model that we launched in our organization in January of this year. I'm going to give some highlights around the model, but I really want you all to hear from Maggie, because not only has she been an advocate and a champion for the model, she's also serving on one of the units that we use to soft launch the model so that we can test it and perfect it before we start to roll it out more across the enterprise. Like many of you, Unity Point Health is thinking about ways to deliver care that positions our clinicians to practice at top of license, reducing the noise and the burdens of things that we have them do every day sometimes that really are not part of their practice, while also increasing quality, safety, patient experience, and ultimately looking at a way to do that at a more cost-effective way. And as we started to establish our collaborative care model, we started really with the nurses. We know that our nurses are our best strategists. And we brought together a focus group over a series to really have the nurses inform to us. If we were to start exploring what a collaborative care model would look like, what would that mean to you? And I think we developed something not only that has been really exciting, but the more exciting thing now is we're starting to see very positive outcomes in our model. The one thing that we went into the model and our nurses gave us quick feedback on is they didn't want us to just develop another team-based model. They hear about this in other systems across the country. For them, this was more than just team-based care. And that's why we landed on the nomenclature of collaborative care. A couple of key exciting things, two things that we advanced in the model. The first one is two new roles that are really new to our healthcare team, but really critical. The first of which is the clinical lead RN, which is taking the place of our traditional charge nurse. This person will care for patients over multiple collaborative care groups, theoretically over multiple units. The exciting thing about this is when we think about positioning a nurse lead to provide resource and expertise, knowledge, the ability to help with patient flow, the ability to help keep the care continuum moving at an optimal speed, this is the position that we've created for that. The other thing that we've created in terms of a role is the attending RN. The attending RN is really responsible for leading the collaborative care group, leveraging holistic leadership techniques and the ability to delegate across multiple professionals. We've really trained and positioned the attending RN to really serve and ensuring that the collaborative care group is meeting the needs of our patients. The model is supported with our virtual nurse program that we've been able to expand and over time. And we started with initially focusing on our ADT functions, admission, discharge, and transfer. And we continue to add scope to the virtual nurse program to help augment some of the scope that's needed in the care environment. The latest one of which is very exciting, which is a surveillancing workflow that we've been able to start and develop within our system for the nurses to start looking at quality-based checklists, looking at things like discharge milestones, really getting ahead of what are the needs of the patients and positioning and supporting the team members on the ground in order to deliver to that. There are many exciting things that I can say about the collaborative care model, but I want to turn over to Maggie here and have her give her firsthand experience on how the model is working and what she believes is critical about it. Maggie?
Yeah, thank you so much. So starting at the top, the lead RN, we had had charge nurse forums. So charge nurses from all the floors got together. And what could we do better to help support the charge nurses? Because right now on all of our floors, charge nurses take patients. So our big ask was, we want to be able to be a charge nurse without patients so that we can support our other staff members. So this lead RN oversees two floors right now, but they don't have any patients. So they can go to those rapid responses and support the attending and the licensed staff and the PCT. And then the attending RN and the licensed RN, along with the PCT, work as a team to take care of a group of patients. And everyone kind of has their own roles, but they intermingle and intermix. And so we're really working on communication and how we can better serve our patients. I've served in every role, and it's been awesome to have new LPNs. We haven't had LPNs before in our organization, so well, we have, but not in a model like this. Helping onboard LPNs and get them ready to take on that licensed staff position has been great. And we're bringing in more staff, whereas if our PCTs would have become LPNs, they may have went elsewhere for work because we didn't have an LPN position available. So this is opening new doors for those who are advancing their degrees within our organization. They created this model, but then they kind of gave us the freedom to make the model how we want it. So we created champions. And so we have champions from each unit on different shifts, different roles. And we all come together about once a month. We kind of met a little bit more frequently when we first rolled it out so that we could work through the kinks and what was working for us, what could we do better so that everything had a good flow with it and that everyone kind of knew what they were doing and what the day in the life was going to look like for us and for our patients within this model. And then adding that virtual nurse component, they're not physically there, but they can be there in 2 seconds to help you with your patient, educate them, do admissions and discharges. And so that has been awesome with our throughput as well for getting patients admitted and discharged quicker. And then just having those additional support roles has been huge for us too. Thanks, Dre.
Thank you, Maggie. Very exciting to see and start tracking some of our outcomes with this model. We've seen in the areas that we've launched it, increased outcomes in terms of our patient experience. We've seen a decrease in some of the nursing sensitive indicators, and our safety events have been not only gone down, but we've seen a rise in the number of safety events that have had both positive and increased reporting in our RL system. The other thing that we're seeing is a lower cost per patient day in some areas. We're continuing to track that as some of that data is starting to come in, but we're very excited about this. One of the things that continues to help propel our collaborative care model, if we'll go to the next slide, is our escalating huddle structure. We call it RESPECT. The acronym stands for R, reflection, E, enhanced flow, S, safety, P, performance, E, encourage opportunities, C, closing the loop, and T, thankful. There's a five-tier structure to this huddle structure in our organization that starts with our frontline staff, ending at tier five, which is the tier that I have the pleasure of serving on, along with our health system CEO and the rest of the core council, our senior team. The exciting thing about this structure is that at each one of these levels, tier one through five, there's a built-in feedback loop. So by 11:45 every day, if there are challenges or exciting things that people want to communicate through the huddle structure, each level gets a feedback to them from the highest level of the organization by 11:45 every day, which is very exciting. This has truly transformed our ability to deliver care to our patients in a way, but also support our team members. I'll tell you just as a testimonial, one of the things that we saw early on when we started the RESPECT huddle, like many of you, is the rising incidence of workplace violence that we were seeing in our hospitals across our three states. We were a bit surprised at the number. Our team members were not, because these are things that they had experienced on a day-to-day basis. But this huddle structure was able to really highlight some of the challenge areas we were seeing and really position the leadership and management to be able to respond quickly to those, meeting the needs of our patients and especially meeting the needs of our team members that were on the front lines that were dealing with these situations. We're excited that this huddle has been now fully rolled out across our entire system. So every cost center, every unit within our organization is participating in a RESPECT huddle. And I can tell you the way that we get the information and the fluidity of it is just really exciting to see. It's one of, I tell people often, it's the best 15 minutes of my day.
I love it. That sounds great.
In a very meaningful way.
Wonderful. Thank you, Dre and Maggie. I see some questions coming in. So let me just take a moment here and ask, while we have the two of you, is there a career ladder at Unity Point for your LPNs? That's coming in from Stephanie. Does Unity Point have a clinical ladder for LPNs to support you as they come into your organization anew?
Yeah, I can take that one, Melissa. We do have what we call a career pathway. And we have a specific pathway program for our LPNs. We assign a pathway navigator to that program that will help our team members grow through that career pathway. Yes.
That's great. Thank you. And a great question for our beloved editor-in-chief of the journal, Lily Galanis. How do your RESPECT huddles differ from your daily safety huddles?
It is a great question. Maggie, do you want to take that one?
Sure. So we actually kind of intertwine the safety huddle into the RESPECT huddle a little bit. So the S stands for safety. So our safety huddle that we would have, that would be a little snippet right there where that would kind of take place of our safety huddle. And then sometimes later in the day, they do have a follow-up one around 10 a.m. for just our unit, for like admissions, discharges, flow, stuff like that. But the S for safety, that's where that comes into play.
Great. Thank you so much. That was wonderful information. And there's some questions coming in, but we're going to come back and get to as many of those as we can. But for right now, thank you to Dre and Maggie. And we're going to move ahead to our colleagues from UNC Rex Healthcare, Lori Ryan and Mackenzie Dutman. Lori?
Yes. Hi. Good afternoon, everyone. Thank you, Melissa, for inviting us to participate. What a great way to end Nurses Month. The conversation today for me is really about connecting all the whys, how we connect and how we engage with our team. Thanks to Dre and Maggie for working as one great team on this presentation. And I'd also like to give a huge shout out to Mackenzie for agreeing to take this journey with me. As Melissa stated, I'm the chief nursing officer at UNC Rex. I've only been here about 6 months, but I've been a nurse for 41 years, and I have over 20 years of leadership experience. I'm honored to be here today and privileged to introduce Mackenzie. Mackenzie Dutman is a clinical nurse four on one of our UNC Rex medical surgical patient care units. She's certified as a med-surg nurse, and she's also certified in healthcare quality. She earned her bachelor's degree from the University of North Carolina, Chapel Hill. She has a master's of science of nursing from Western Governors University. She currently serves as a co-chair for our hospital's Nursing Congress, and she's been involved and has led many shared governance practice initiatives over the last several years. In a few minutes, she's going to share with you and present our shared governance model. First, I'd like to tell you a little bit about UNC Health. UNC Health is a 14-hospital system in North Carolina, and Rex is one of those hospitals. Our mission here at Rex and throughout UNC is to improve the health and the well-being of North Carolinians. We accomplish this through providing leadership excellence in patient care, education, and research. Our vision is to be the nation's leading public academic healthcare system. Our values include, it starts with me, leading the way, one great team, and Carolina Care. It starts with me highlights ownership, accountability, and trust. Leading the way is where we provide innovative care, improve the lives of our patients every day, and train the next generation of healthcare leaders. One great team means we are better together. Carolina Care is where we provide compassionate, holistic care for our patients and each other. Our values provide a foundation for the way we lead and work together. They drive our actions and support our culture. They lay the foundation for all that we do, and they propel us into to succeed. I wanted to share some of our accolades because we are definitely proud of the culture that we have created and the communication and success that our team has accomplished. On the screen, you can see many different accolades. I'll point out that UNC Rex is a LeapFrog Grade A, a CMS 5-star, and Magnet recognized. We're one of five organizations to achieve this, and we're very proud. Now, I would like to invite Mackenzie to speak to you about Carolina Care and our shared governance here at Rex.
Thank you, Lori. I'm honored to be a part of this journey with you. At UNC Rex, Carolina Care is vital to our culture and how we communicate with everyone, from our patients and our families to our coworkers as well. And as one of our four values, as Lori mentioned, it's made a top priority across our organization. And it serves as a model for how we deliver care to our patients. Even as early as during the interview process, people hear about Carolina Care behavior and communication expectations. On the next slide, we can see the three components that make up Carolina Care. The Carolina Care model activates the Swansea caring process. And many of you may know this caring theory already, including knowing, being with, doing for, enabling, and maintaining belief. Here at UNC Rex, we believe in the power of this theory, not only with our patients, but with our coworkers as well. The caring theory is the foundation of Carolina Care, and it's truly a framework for supporting our nursing practice here at Rex. Carolina Care also activates our caring relationships at all levels. Those include with ourselves, with our coworkers, and with our patients. And lastly, it activates the caring interventions, such as the use of words and ways that work. Combining the effective use of all three of these components really help us to demonstrate caring and compassion in all of our interactions. And as you can see in this next slide, Carolina Care is also embedded into our nursing professional practice model. It's literally at the center of the practice model, and it promotes the relationships that make up the heart of the work that we do. These relationships are with our patients, our family, their families, with the community that we serve. And together we know that we can create a caring, healing environment through both the relationship-based care that you see here on the model, as well as the Swanson's caring theory. In a few minutes, Lori's going to share with you all how we can integrate Carolina Care and the caring theory that Swanson came up with in a way that helps to close the communication gap with frontline nurses and our nurse executives. I'm going to start on this next slide by providing an example of one of these methods, which is shared governance. So here at Rex, Our shared governance model serves as a way for us to collaborate, have decision-making, and for us to encourage accountability for improving practice, quality, and work life. Our councils are really a perfect display, in my opinion, of partnership with leadership and nurses and other healthcare professionals at Rex. One example of how these councils are structured is with Nursing Congress, which I've had the honor of serving on currently as co-chair. And the purpose of Nursing Congress is to serve as a forum to share information and to share the decisions that are made at our other six nurse-driven council meetings. And I think that's important to mention too, you know, the fact that they are nurse-driven, which is outstanding. The Congress represents nursing to the executive leadership team, and it facilitates communication between other nursing councils. The membership consists of at least 70% frontline nursing representation, but is complemented with managers and educators, CNS specialists. We also have, of course, our CNO and our directors in attendance as well. And another example of how shared governance facilitates communication is with Clinical Practice Council. The co-chair of this council actually attends our system level practice council, which ensures that communication is effectively disseminated so that the work is not being done in a silo, so to speak, but collaboratively across all levels of nursing, but also within our entire UNC system. And we all know that shared governance is an important avenue for nurses to share their voices and own their practice. There are many examples that I can share with you about the nurse-driven work that's been accomplished within these councils. For example, a work group last year sometime formed the clinical formed from the Clinical Practice Council, developed a unit resource list to enhance communication across all of the Rex patient care areas. This unit resource list included descriptions and specialties of each unit, as well as unit contact information, all comprehensively on one page. Another example is related to root cause analyses, and this is often referred to as RCAs. During Clinical Practice Council, we called for the lessons learned from RCAs to be disseminated to all hospital coworkers so that everyone could benefit from the takeaways. And now our CMO sends out what she refers to as safety summaries. This helps to strengthen our communication and our transparency across the entire organization. These are just a couple of the examples of the work that's possible with the nurse-driven shared governance model. Engaging with shared governance serves as one of the many ways that the voices of nurses are shared and heard. Next, Lori will share some additional vessels of communication that are used here at Rex.
Thank you, Mackenzie. First, I wanted to say that over the years, I've developed several different strategies in my leadership role or as a CNO to kind of close that communication gap with frontline nurses. Foremost for me is staying clinically focused, staying clinically connected, and really trying to always getting proximate with the work that's being done on the front lines. Most important for me is authentic and transparent communication. It establishes the trust for open dialogue and open communication. At UNC Rex, we want all of our nurses' voices heard. And you heard a little bit from Mackenzie about our shared governance, but besides shared governance, we allow many opportunities for communicating via email, or some of the most recent is a cup of Joe with the CNO. The cup of Joe with the CNO I started because I wanted to be able to sit down with staff and have an opportunity to connect, discuss, and allow them to ask questions, and really a time for me to listen and to respond. I may not have all the answers, but at least I can find out what's on their minds. At UNC Rex, we have many ways of communicating, very similar to some of the information that Dre has already shared with you, but we do have a very formal process for our email communication, which we call Teammate Times. We also have our Nursing Matters newsletter. We share information on social media, such as our own internal nursing Facebook page. We also recently have been leveraging videos as a communication tool because we know that some staff prefer to receive videos versus emails. Mm-hmm. And most recently, we're exploring TikTok in order to connect with the next generation of nurses. Additionally, I hold monthly town hall meetings called Nurses in the Know. In May, we offered three different town hall meetings. All three were successful, but for different reasons. Two of the town hall meetings, we had great attendance. one meeting, we had a lower attendance and everybody was telling me, well, it's not a good time. We should just, you know, not offer this time again. And, you know, I took a moment, I thought about it, and it really gave me an intimate time to connect with a lower number of staff. And so I am going to keep that time because it was successful for a few members of our team. But what I did hear also from the group was that could we please offer a WebEx option? So in the month of June, our focus will be to have four town halls with one of them allowing only WebEx only. And an additional tactic that I wanted to mention is about executive rounding and executive rounding throughout the hospital. So I know for years we've all been talking about executive rounding, and it's something that, you know, we do it well for a while and then sometimes we fall off, but really we have to be committed to this executive rounding because it's an opportunity to thank and to reward and to acknowledge the work that is being done. And so, you know, it's been difficult, I'm going to say, with some of our staffing challenges over the last few years for the nurses to be able to pull away from the bedside and have some of those interactions that we used to have. But I'm still committed to the executive rounding, and I'm looking for my nurse leaders on the units to be able to point out to me people that we can acknowledge in the moment and people that we can thank in the moment. On the next slide, what I wanted to point out is just some other ways in which we acknowledge teams. I'm sure that many of you have some of these same programs. Highly committed to the DAISY Award. I think it's one of the best awards out there. I think Dre mentioned that they also are invested in DAISY. We also have a Good Catch Award. We have a Making a Difference Award. And then we have People Are Everything and Everywhere. And this is what we call our e-high five. This is an electronic way in which to give a shout out. We also use Lotio within our organization, which allows us to send thank yous, birthday wishes. We can send a shout out about an anniversary date. We celebrate Preceptor of the Month, and then we have UNC Health Value Superstars, which recognizes our teammates for modeling the behaviors of our organization and modeling the values of our organization. One slide that I wanted to share with you is really about mindful communications, about positive outcomes. So I think many of you know that CAUTI and CLABSI has been a struggle for many of the organizations over the last several years with COVID. And so upon, you know, arriving at UNC Rex, I realized that we had a CAUTI and CLABSI issue here also. And, you know, we really kind of looked at what were we doing and were we really committed to that evidence-based practice that we know is best. And many people felt that maybe we had left some of those practice standards. And so what we decided to do, along with our Nurse Practice Council and our nursing leadership team, is to really have a call to action meeting where we brought all the parties together and we shared the information, we took a look at the data, and then we asked for everyone to take action. And the action needed to happen at the unit level. But the meeting allowed us to establish purpose, goals, and it empowered us to change. After the meeting, each unit was to go back and evaluate their evidence-based practice. They were establishing accountability on their units, and they needed to implement improvements. I'm very proud to say that most recently, we celebrated 11 units across the organization for zero CAUTIs, zero CLABSIs in the first quarter. You know, you can kind of see our donut represents our zero, and it surely never hurts to take food when you're rounding. And I have to tell you, we made sure that we rounded on night shift because, as many of you know, sometimes the donuts, they don't get left for night shift. So we made sure that day shift and night shift were celebrated. On the next slide, I wanted to share a few strategies with you. You know, we keep talking about new strategies or models of care. And so a couple of things that I wanted to point out, kind of very similar to some of what Dre has already spoken of. But and this was before I was here, but in August of 2022, UNC Rex launched their virtual nursing program. Over the last 10 months, they've increased the hours of availability. And so now, virtual nursing is available 24 hours. They've increased their scope, as you heard Dre, very similar journey in that we do admission, transfer, and discharge. And now we're looking at surveillance and potentially wound care. We recently completed a virtual nursing satisfaction survey. So we wanted to hear, again, listening to the voice of the nurse, what their thoughts were on virtual nursing. 51% stated that the virtual nursing program made an impact on their decision to stay at Rex. 70% of the nurses responded that the response time to patients improved since the virtual nursing program was launched. 87% responded that virtual nursing had impacted their overall ability to provide care. 60% agreed that virtual nursing was definitely needed. 86% rated communication between the virtual nurse and the unit nurse as either satisfied or very satisfied. So for us, we want to continue to grow that virtual nursing program, but we also know that we need to stay connected with the frontline staff in order to be selective on our journey. A second care model that was changed is the addition to LPNs. So I think that you heard a lot from Dre regarding his collaborative care model and also about the introduction of LPNs. So for UNC Rex, we've decided that we're adding one LPN around the clock to each of our med-surg unit. The LPN will take a full assignment, and that LPN is being supported by a charge nurse who's patient-free. As you can see, again, this gives us an opportunity to work directly with the frontline nurses to tell us what they need most. Everyone was a little skeptical when we started talking about hiring LPNs, but once we started discussions and meetings and looking at scope of practice and trying to find out how we could get the work done, our team came together with this solution. So I'd like to thank everyone, and I wish everyone a great journey.
Thank you so much to all of our presenters. We had so much information packed into those few minutes. So I want to just take a moment. We're getting a number of questions coming in through the Q&A box. So please, to our audience, we invite your questions. We'll get to as many of those as we can. That was a lot of information to unpack. So I'm going to just start taking a few of the questions as they come in. Since Laura, you were just talking about this, let's stay on the virtual nursing for a moment, and maybe Maggie, you could speak to this because I know this has been a big part of your practice. We've got Tashana is asking, how does the virtual nursing program work? How does that work? What is it exactly? And how does it interface with the nurses on the floors? So Maggie, I know you've done a lot of work with your virtual care program at Unity Point.
We put in an order, a consult order for the virtual nurse, and then we call her and we just tell her, we just give her information. Like, do we want her to admit the patient, discharge the patient? She can do education for the patient. And then we can put that in the consult, and then we call her, and then ours are a cart. So we push the cart in there, and then she pops on the screen and helps the patient in any way that they can.
Great. Mackenzie, is that similar to the way you're using the virtual care program at Rex?
It is, Melissa. We have iPads here at Rex for our virtual nursing program. I think it's important to mention that, you know, when we set up the iPads, we let the virtual nurse spend that time with the patient and it's uninterrupted, right? So that really helps to build that relationship with the patient and also give them that uninterrupted time, that dedicated time to go over whatever information it might be for that session. And it also then gives that time back to the bedside nurse to relieve them to help care for some of the other needs their patients have.
Great, thank you. Here's a question about the pandemic. Anybody remember that we all just went through? Any lessons learned during the pandemic regarding successful communication that you would like to share? Both teams have shared tremendous number of initiatives around communication. Did they come out of the pandemic when you saw the need of what everyone was going through? Have they been changed up a little bit because of the pandemic? What's been your experience over the past few years in particular? Dre, do you want to start?
Yeah, I can take a stab at that one. You know, one of the things that we had to do was really level set where we were, realizing that much of the change that we saw in the pandemic was more structural than cyclical, which is what we experienced during the pandemic and shortly after. And so we really aligned our strategies to building around the infrastructure to ensure that we had the communication channels in place so that that communication could flow fluidly as we needed to get things out quickly to our teams because we were working on some really critical strategic initiatives. Mm-hmm. So I would say that that was one of the most important things that we did in terms of pivoting our strategy, Melissa. Mm-hmm.
Wonderful. How about the Rex team related to the pandemic? Yeah,
Melissa, I would say, and I know I wasn't at Rex for most of the pandemic, but I can say as a leader, I think one of the thing that the that came to light as a nursing leader, you really needed to try many modes of communication because not everyone is going to read their emails. And so I think that's where we learned to use our huddles effectively. And we also learned how to communicate from the bottom to the top and from the top to the bottom so that we were effectively making changes sometimes from the morning till the afternoon. And so the pandemic really did push us to develop those communication strategies in a better, more prescribed way.
That makes sense. That makes sense. We've all been through so much, and this question sort of goes hand in hand with the pandemic. It's related to nursing shortage and not having enough staff. I'm not sure if that's relevant to anybody in the audience. If you're working through some staffing challenges where you are right now, seems like that's an age-old conundrum that we have faced in our profession since Skippy was a pup. Help me understand, really, from all of your perspectives, how do these mindful communication strategies help? I think it's kind of maybe a rhetorical question, but how do they help in the face of staffing challenges? Let's hear from Mackenzie and Maggie first. When you know you're short-staffed on your shift or on your unit, you're working through that, how does this engagement with your chief nurse executive and your whole leadership team really help sustain you through those tough times, whether it's staffing on a shift or a longer term issue? Mackenzie, you want to take a stab at that first?
Of course. So I think it really, it's important that we are united in our mission and our vision and our values, right? And so in the pandemic, we saw this come through a lot and just was a reminder to everyone, not only the need to be open-minded and how we maybe tackled previous challenges that arose, but just a reminder at how we need to put open communication and ensuring that we're unified in all of the efforts that we have together, no matter the level of nursing, right? So whether you're a staff nurse or a nursing executive, we're unified in that. And we have to make sure that when things are changing as frequently as they were, especially during the pandemic, that everyone who needs to know knows, right? Everyone has a seat at the table to be able to understand and provide feedback.
Love that. Love that. How about you, Maggie? Did you have the same experience during your work?
Yes. Yeah. And I think having our respect huddles and how fast something can go like up the chain has helped a lot. So then in like within hours, everyone kind of has an idea, like this is what's going on here. And if there's an urgent need, then we can get help.
So it sounds like we spent a lot of time today talking about the infrastructure that you've all put together, your models of care, the structural support of your models, your shared governance models. It sounds like then when times are tough, it's this unification that you said, the unity, that really helps bring those models to life and sees you through those tough times. That's good to hear. Now, one of the questions coming in is sort of a reality check, I think, for all of us. We know communication is difficult. We know that under stress, sometimes we're not at our best. So the question is around how do we manage the naysayers, those who maybe bring negativity as their communication style into our workplace, those who maybe use incivility or bullying. We see this every day. Dre, you had talked earlier about violence in the workplace. We know that these are very unsettling times in our society and certainly in our workplaces. Lori and Dre, can you start out by talking a little bit about how we manage the difficult conversations? And then I'd like to hear from Maggie and Mackenzie as well. Lori, do you want to start about incivility, sure, bullying, any of the challenging communication styles that we do see?
So I think first we have to acknowledge, right? I mean, we all know that it happens. And so I think acknowledging it and managing it, we need not any longer to just accept that it's the way in which we are as nurses. We are not going to keep our younger nurses if we can't figure out how to treat each other in a respectful manner. We have our values, and our values means that we are one great team, and it means that we're respectful. And so we can't ignore it. We have to face it head on, and we have to deal with it. It may mean that we have to use our HR policies if necessary. I think we can take the moment to coach. I do believe that from, we are focusing on team communication. I love this new book that I just read, which was called Culture Code. And it's really about how we decide what our culture is going to be and how we need to work within that culture. And I think units have cultures. Hospitals have cultures, executive teams have cultures, but what we can't have is people belittling or disrespecting each other. As far as workplace violence, it's something I'm very passionate about. We just finished our fifth focus group on workplace violence today, and that was focus groups with frontline staff. We've done a lot related to workplace violence, as I'm sure many organizations, looking at metal detectors, having a zero tolerance policy. Now we really kind of need to take the next steps, and we need to figure out how do we support staff in a better way? How do we identify workplace violence at all levels? And how do we communicate it up to the executives? I think that we have the opportunity, because many people deal with it without reporting it and without escalating. And it's something that we need to get better at, just as we do safety issues related to patients. We need to have the same types of processes in place for workplace violence.
Thank you. Dre, any comments on that?
Yeah, I would say, first off, we invite and encourage the transparent feedback as long as it's, there's mutual respect and there's no incivility that's associated with that. I think one of the things that we've done really as a way to not only send out the communication, but to receive it, is streamline the vehicles that we're using to do that. So Maggie knows this. There's really three formats that we do that with, one of which is our weekly video series that we call What Matters Most. It's where I get an opportunity to speak to our nurses as well as some of the other senior leaders about the things that are important for the week. The other one is our focused Facebook page, which is a thing that we can use to celebrate and encourage us to share in best practice. And then the third one was the one that I mentioned to you, which is our Unity Point Nurse Proud monthly newsletter. And those three things also have a feedback mechanism by which team members can give us feedback. And so we manage that within that space. Tough questions, tough conversations are encouraged. We'll manage behaviors to incivility and workplace violence along with that. But I think the more that we streamline and standardize in that way, we continue to see some really favorable fluid communications from that standpoint.
And Maggie, when you're at the point of care working so hard in the med-surg area and you have one of these episodes evolve either in a teammate or from another a professional, from a family member, how do you feel that support sort of in your day-to-day work that comes from Dre, from your organizational structure? How does that play out for you kind of in real life, as somebody mentioned, a day in the life?
Yeah, so last year they sent our supervisors and managers to healthy workforce workshops, and then they brought ideas back to the unit, and we created our own like cultural norms for our unit. So how we want to be treated as individuals. So if there is a workplace issue, then we can pull up, these are our cultural norms on our floor as peers. This is how we said we're going to be treated. And then from the patient family standpoint, we used to have behavior contracts, but those sounded like threatening towards patients and families. And so we had our a committee work on creating a wellness contract because that sounds more welcoming. And then we can have this committee come and put a wellness contract together to help keep both the patient and staff safe and avoid workplace violence from happening.
That sounds great. Great. How about you, Mackenzie?
I was just going to say, from the staff perspective, you know, it starts with holding each other accountable for the way that we would hope to be treated and the way we communicate and behave. And as we mentioned before with Carolina Care, when we have potential new hires in the interview process, they are already exposed to what our Carolina Care model is here for behavior and communication expectations. Mm-hmm. You know, when I've heard it said before, what we permit, we promote. So keeping that in mind with all that we do as well. And from the patient and family side of things, if we're having incivility in that kind of arena, I have found it incredibly helpful. Our executive team led an initiative of zero tolerance policy for aggressive behavior and communication, mm-hmm. in such a way that you could see these expectations posted and visible throughout our campus at nurses' stations and the elevator bays. It's something that's, you know, on the forefront of everyone's mind, and just a reminder, you know, how do you want to communicate effectively, but also kindly?
Excellent. Excellent. Some of it comes back to, what was the book back in the day? Everything I Need to Know I Learned in Kindergarten. Some of this comes back to some of the basics of humanity and the golden rule, but it gets tricky and tough when you're in the heat of the moment, no doubt. But it sounds like both of your organizations have some great, not only initiatives and structures in place, but the accountability moment to moment. And it all stems from culture, it sounds like to me. So that's really important takeaway for all of us. Now, this is a term we've heard for decades, some of us in nursing. This question is about nurse burnout. We're worried about nurse staffing. We're worried about nursing turnover. We're worried about all of the news that we hear and read and feel every day about nurses leaving the profession. Sounds to me like many of the things that you've all talked about really promote retention and decrease nurse turnover and hopefully nurse burnout. I know nurses are the most resilient people on the planet, so we need to keep tapping into that, no doubt. But Lori, can you start and tell me about some of the results that maybe these initiatives around communication and culture and community, the results that you're seeing when it comes to staffing, retention, recruitment, and even burnout?
Sure. So I'd say from retention and recruitment, you know, we've been able to actually fill many, many of our positions. Some people might find it surprising, but as of right now, I have no agency in our EDs. I have no agency in our ICUs. We do still have some agency in our med-surg area. We went from probably about 215 external agency to we're around 75 right now, and we have a plan to exit them over the next several months with our new hires. So we have been able to recruit. I think one of the reasons we're able to recruit is because of culture that we have at UNC Rex, and it's very, you feel it. It is the secret sauce. When you start your interview process, you feel it all the way to the day that you're hired. We have many, many touch points with our potential candidates from the first time that we connect all the way through to their start date. So I think that sends a message of we are a team. Each unit, I think Maggie talked about their unit cultures. We also have done that work here at UNC Rex. And so each unit does have their own culture. They kind of have their own even fund committees on how they welcome staff. I think the other piece that when we're looking at retention is everything that we just talked about. If we can't have enough staff and we're going to feel that we have been abused and we never can have a lunch break that's uninterrupted, we're going to have nurses that don't want to come to work. So one of the initiatives that I think is very important are nurses walking away from the bedside, having a lunch and it being uninterrupted, and making sure that our electronic devices are turned off. If we have Vocera shouldn't come to lunch with us. And sometimes that's us as nurses. We've always thought that it's easier. Oh, I'll just be in the break room. Come and get me. We need to have our nurses detach themselves for 45 minutes to take a moment so that they can work that 12-hour shift, which is extremely difficult.
Wonderful. Thank you. Dre, anything on that big topic?
Yeah, I think Lori hit it spot on. You know, I often say nurse well-being burnout is one of the things that absolutely keeps me up at night. And this is where I get extremely excited about our collaborative care model. You know, it was built and designed to really support the nurse, not only from the standpoint of growing them in their professional practice for the newer nurse, you know, minimizing that complexity gap that we all continue to see as we are rapidly, you know, promoting and excelling our new to practice RNs, but also from an overall needs for RN, it's to drive down our dependency on contingent labor as well. And so as we start to hear about the qualitative outcomes of the model, things like, I finally feel like I can take a break and break away and actually take a formal lunch without mm-hmm. having to worry about my patients.
Exactly.
Those are some of the things that our team members like Maggie are continuously telling us with this model.
So those metrics that we spoke about in our objectives and our takeaways were some of them qualitative, some of them quantitative. So looking at nurse turnover rates, recruitment and retention, but satisfaction and engagement in the workplace. Excellent. Thank you. Michael's got a question here about mentorship. Do you both have formal mentorship programs and how do they work? Mackenzie and Maggie, do you want to take those? I know you are mentoring your colleagues every single day. Mackenzie, do you want to start?
Sure. We do have mentorship program here at Rex, but we also embed that within all of the new hiring process and getting our folks up and running on the ground. So with our preceptors and the information that they get, they have preceptor classes, we have meetings, check-ins throughout orientation, and we know that the mentorship is ongoing and that we are all a resource for the new hires coming in, and that we expect that of everyone on our team, that we all have each other's back and we can be a go-to for anyone that needs help.
Wonderful. Maggie, is that your experience as well?
Yes, and then for our nurse residency program, so for our new nurses coming in, they're paired with a mentor that is outside of their unit, so they can feel more free to express themselves and not, if they were to feel like backlash, so they can vent and say what's going on and talk to someone that is just outside their unit and they can say their worries, what's going well, and they're in a group with the same colleagues within like med-surg, but they're paired with like an ICU nurse or something. So we have preceptor. Awesome. Yeah.
Well, I'm very mindful of the clock. I know everybody's got a busy afternoon to get back to. So let me just ask each of you for a quick one final thought that you might want to share with our audience about mindful communication and all the things we've talked about today. Maggie, do you want to continue? Maggie, start.
Sure. I think my biggest thing is just keeping an open mind, because you don't always know everyone's perspective until they tell you. So having an open mind and just listening to everyone's point of view.
Thank you, Maggie. Mackenzie?
I would just say that when it comes to communication, instead of speaking, the priority really ought to be, it would be wise for us to all listen a little bit more first, listen first and then speak, and that will get you a long way in your communication journey.
Love that. Lori?
So, you know, I really think that Mackenzie kind of hit it on the head, right? I think we all need to listen, but I think as a nurse exec, it is, besides listening, trying to figure out how to be present and how to make sure that you're connecting in the right way and that your staff feel that they can reach out to you and you're going to be here for them.
Love that. Thank you, Lori. Dre?
You know, as we round up Nurses Month, I would say while we respect and reflect on our tradition in nursing, now is the time to break some tradition and really do some innovative things to continue to move this in the right direction. So be a little bit of a disruptor and continue to innovate, because that's the only way we're going to get ourselves out of this.
I love that. Thank you so much. I just want to take a moment to say a personal thank you to Lori and Dre and Mackenzie and Maggie. It's just been a pleasure working with you on this webinar, and I've learned so much from each of you, and I just can't thank you enough for all the work that you put into this. And a huge thank you to our audience. We know that there are many, many of you on this call right now. I'm sorry we didn't get to all of your questions. There are many that are here that are unanswered, but hopefully you've taken some pearls of wisdom away from this today that you can put into play in your workplace. Now I'd like to introduce Sherry Mee, who is the Executive Editorial Director for the American Nurse Journal.
Thank you, Melissa. Thank you, everyone, for attending the webinar, and I hope you're having a great Nurses Month. Thanks to our panelists for sharing your experience and motivating us to do more, do better, and communicate better. And thank you, Melissa and Kirby Bates and Associates for supporting this session with an unrestricted educational grant. This session is part of a webinar series we're running in 2023, and look for announcements about the next webinar on medication safety coming up soon. This webinar will be available on demand shortly at myamericannurse.com/webinars. Please feel free to share the link with colleagues. You can see that on demand afterwards. And again, thank you so much for attending today.